This is Tony Curtis from the Manitou. What is a Manitou? A Manitou is a spirit that lives within all living things. It's also a spirit that lives in non-living things as well. For example, anything can have a Manitou. Just about anything. A dog. A frog. A cat. A bat. A rat. Everybody has a Manitou. A shoe. Two shoes, Manitou shoes. Two shoe Manitous. Everything has a Manitou. And Manitou can be a very bad guy too. This is Tony Curtis talking about Manitous.
Well, thank you, Tony.
Tony, wow. I can't believe you got him.
That is amazing, dude. The people that
amazing.
You have hooked me up with.
I know. Well, I'm in show business. So.
I know. It's really impressive.
It's really, he's still around. It's really nice to know that he's still.
Apparently still around.
Still around.
That, of course, is my friend Brendan Small. This is Just the Discs, a podcast about Blu-rays. I'm Brian Sauer. We are talking about the Manitou.
Oh, no. Why did I start with this? Where do I go from here?
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, this is a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a nice one. Oh, somebody ate some bad seafood.
Dude, Manitou, one thing that doesn't come up in the movie is his digestive issues.
Yeah.
They're pretty serious.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
This is a movie that I had heard about for a while, and then only recently, within the last like 3-4 years, did I see it for the first time.
How long have you had this?
About 3 days.
It has been 400 years since its last reincarnation.
Any pain?
It kind of moves sometimes.
The soul of black magic is waiting to be reborn.
What's your diagnosis?
Panna! Richie.
For years, man has turned his back on the supernatural.
This is hers!
Might almost describe it,
Some will deny it.
There's a fetus.
Others will fear it.
On her neck?
One woman will give birth to it. The Manitou. Since the beginning of time, it has practiced the mysterious arts. Its day is near. Each hour it grows stronger. Soon it will come. The Manitou. Starring Tony Curtis on a supernatural journey into the world of avenging spirits.
John!
Michael Ansara.
What does a white man want with Indian magic?
A modern American Indian thrust into a savage struggle with unspeakable taboos. Susan Strasberg, living in a nightmare. Innocent people, tormented by terror, threatened by the unknown, trapped by an ancient horror. The Manitou. An evil that never dies. It just waits to be reborn. The Manitou.
Well, it wasn't easy to see for a while.
No, but thank God Shudder had it first.
Yeah. Oh,
So a while ago, Shudder had an okay print of it, and I watched it with my brother. And my brother, you know, Jeff Small, he's a makeup effects guy. So he's always pointing me in the direction of movies that have interesting makeup effects. So he'll usually go, oh, no, you got to look at this, the Manitou. And I'll go, okay. And I'll go, oh, right, this is the Native American spirit movie. And he's like, yeah, and it's got some pretty okay effects here and there. And there's some stuff that's, you know, but whatever it is, he's like me with like, you know, he's like how we are. We will appreciate. We'll find the thing to appreciate in whatever lunatic world that we're in. So,
yeah, and this is definitely a lunatic world. For those that don't know the story of the Manitou,
where do we start?
Where do you start?
Well, we start with Tony Curtis My name's Tony Curtis, and in this world, I am a charlatan a tarot card reader, and I will read your fortune. I will trick old ladies into believing that they're...
So he's a tarot card reader, and...
Yeah, it's really funny. That's actually a great setup, and he's actually... I mean, it's clear it's probably a paycheck movie for him, but...
Yeah. It's 1978.
Yeah.
And he probably hasn't gotten a lot of work. Okay, so this is probably... I'm putting everything together that I learned from... Because this is what I really wanted to do. This is why I chose this movie to do with you, because I needed to know more. I needed to know more. So I think... by the way, this is a San Francisco movie.
Yeah.
And there are some great San Francisco movies out there.
I agree.
This happened, I think, the same year that Invasion of the Body Snatchers happened. Yep. That's a great San Francisco movie.
Yep.
Vertigo is a great San Francisco movie.
It is indeed.
What else is another? Let's just think of some just for fun.
Bullet.
Bullet's a San Francisco movie. Mrs. Doubtfire, great San Francisco movie.
Dirty Harry.
Oh, that's right. Dirty Harry's a great San Francisco movie. Full House the movie.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
That's a good San Francisco movie.
Timely reference.
What else? Is there anything else?
I think that's all the San Francisco movies.
Nebraska.
It is.
That's a good one.
Yes.
The Florida Project. It's a good San Francisco movie. Okay. Yeah, but this is a great San Francisco movie. It actually does kind of use the landscape nicely, which is like, I love seeing a San Francisco movie.
Well,
Zodiac.
That's a San Francisco movie. That's the great San Francisco movie. Apparently that was an adaptation made by the filmmakers for the movie. The book is originally set in, New York, I think. So I don't know. I think San Francisco... I mean, I love New York, and I love New York movies, but there's plenty of New York movies. I like the San Francisco to have.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting a ton of them in. I mean, there were the 70s New York, and but anytime I see a new San Francisco movie, I get pretty excited. Yeah. But this is a San Francisco movie, and yeah, let's see if we can walk through this without spoiling anything.
Ugh.
Tony Curtis, we meet him. We start out with Tony Curtis, don't we?
Yeah, there may be a little incident with the woman first.
Right. I think she goes to the doctor first.
Yes.
So how many times has this happened to you? You go to the doctor, you got a lump on your neck.
Yeah, this is the last week.
About the size of a tennis ball on the back of your neck. So putting on a sweater is hard.
Such a bummer.
Can't really wear a hoodie. And it's turtleneck. No way. Not going to happen.
No.
But a nice woman shows up with a problem, and the doctors are like, "This is a crazy lump on your neck, and it's not cancerous. What is this?" And the answer is, and I don't know if this is a spoiler, but I think this is an important part.
Yes,
we're gonna find out in a very short amount of time. Not only is this not cancer, but it's the gestation of a Native American evil demon spirit. That is growing and infused with her nervous system on the back of her neck.
Yes.
Any pain?
No pain.
What were you going to say?
Well, it kind of moves sometimes. It almost shifts as if someone were trying to turn over and get comfortable in bed.
How often does that happen?
Well, maybe 4 or 5 times a day. Well, is it something important?
I don't think it's anything serious, Miss Tandy, but we want to be sure, of course. You understand. Dr. McAvoy, could I see you for a minute, please?
Sure.
Karen, you're going to have to excuse his abruptness now. He's a specialist. I'll be right back. Carol, would you see how soon Dr. Snaith could have space available for surgery? Yes, tumor. Malignant. No, that's it. Thank you.
Malignant? How do you know?
I don't, but until I do...
I wish I knew what the hell we were dealing with here. You know, I've been through every tumor book I can find.
I wrote the books, and I don't know what the hell it is.
Well, until we do, I just assume this thing stayed with us, Jack.
Why?
Why? You remember old Doc Michaels? You remember the rule he laid down to us when we were interning? Be a thief, be a lawyer, even if you must be a doctor, but whatever you do,
don't be an administrator.
Right. Well, I'm worried if this thing gets out before we can explain it. The press and the television people... It's It's really crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. But you've got to admit, it looks a hell of a lot like what's in those x-rays. It just isn't possible. That's right. It isn't possible.
And you can't take it out. It can't be taken out. You can't do a biopsy of a Native American spirit on your neck. Can you?
I don't recommend
Maybe it. Now you can, but back then you could. Not in 1978 in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Medical technology's advanced quite a bit since 78, though. You can easily take care of this now.
Right.
I think, with a pill or something.
Yes. Now there's a pill. But so she goes to, she leaves the hospital distraught as we cut away to
Tony Curtis. Hi, I'm Tony Curtis. My name is Tony Curtis.
And we find him in a robe. We find
oh, God,
him in.
I love that robe.
We find him in a robe with moons, and it looks like Lucky Charms are.
Somebody on Twitter I was talking to, Dave Eves, was saying it looked like a bar mitzvah robe. Or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah. I could see that. Yeah. But it really is something. And he puts on a fake mustache because for some reason that completes the whole. The whole charlatan vibe is that all these old ladies that keep coming over to him, it's almost like the producers, I guess, at some point, right? Because he's just like trying to fool people. But he's a skeptic who's going to become not a skeptic as the story goes on. But he's going to be reunited with this woman who is, in this adaptation, an ex-lover.
Yes.
And she's got a problem, and he's intrigued, and they go on this nice walk-and-talk date, and she talks about the lump on her neck, and they kind of reconnect through the lump.
That's so crazy.
And as you do with people.
Yeah.
And then and things go from an odd start to more precarious as the lump begins to grow.
Yes.
And then he's visited by another one of his clients, a silly old lady who wants to know what to do with her week because she needs like spiritual guidance, and she has some kind of a major freak out.
This is hers. What's the matter? Are you all right? You don't look too good. Listen, my dear.
Ben.
What? Now, Mrs. Hurst. Now, stop, Mrs. Hurst. Now, don't do that, or I'll call an ambulance. Mrs. Hurst, I'm going to the phone and going to call an ambulance. Here's the operator, and I'm going to ask for an ambulance. I want an ambulance. What? Where? Yes, yeah, hold on a minute, please. Oh, Mrs. Hurst, will you sit down? You're having some kind of a seizure. Just calm down. Shh. Operator, I'm at 705 Hillside. Yes, please. The name is Erskine. You must send an ambulance. I know you're the operator. Can you call the hospital? Would you want to hold it? I need it in a hurry. Send it right away.
Hello. Which is?
907. Yes, my dear. Well, I don't know where. But then, I haven't got time to talk to them. Listen, you call the hospital. Wait just a minute. Mrs. Hurst. Would you just, Mrs. Hurst?
And
falls down the stairs,
floats for a while in
the
air.
Right. She does float.
Now, to me, if a lady of any age started floating in front of me, that would be the story. That doesn't really come back, though, in this one. And so, anyway, we're going to find out. I'm gonna fast forward. Yeah, exactly. And he's going to go through this whole mystical journey to find out exactly what's going on and how to combat this while this woman is in a hospital now with a growing something like around the size of a little person on the back of her neck, right? And that's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what's going to happen? Can he find the person to help? Maybe he'll find a nice Native American person to help out that knows what a Manitou is and how to combat one. He will maybe run into a Burgess Meredith along the way.
Oh, man.
It's always nice to run into him.
It's handy. He's handy.
He is handy in every single movie, from Clash of the Titans to Rocky to Manitou. and then there's going to be a confrontation in a hospital.
Yep.
So I don't know where to stop or where to start, but I'm definitely trying to make my way through this story.
Yeah, well, and
there's a lot of odds and ends that happen in between.
And there's a crazy-ass ending that
yes.
is, like, I don't really want to explain it, but part of me is like,
I know. I don't know how much to give away for this ending, but it must be seen.
Yeah, it must be seen. I would say, you know, think The Visitor.
Yes.
Think
without a doubt.
Maybe the end of what's that Fulci movie? The Beyond. Not quite there.
Yeah.
But you know, it's that kind of a thing where you get to the end and you're just like, what? And Yeah, it's pretty great. And there's lasers.
Well, yeah, and there is an interesting thing that does happen, and this is maybe how we can either attempt to defeat is by the notion of what a Manitou simply is, as I was trying to explain, or I wasn't, Tony was, trying to explain at the top of this podcast, which is that every single thing, living or non-living, and this is where I start getting confused.
Yeah.
The non-living thing, that all man-made things have a Manitou. Everything has a spirit. Anything that's been made has a spirit. It's a lot of spirits.
It is.
When you start thinking about it, really.
Dude, this room is full of a lot of spirits.
We're in a room filled with lots of spirits. The spirits of, I don't know, guitars, amplifiers,
mm-hmm.
pedals.
It's getting creepy in here.
It's getting creepy. I've never been so scared by metallic objects before. But that is something that does come into play. Computers, even computers can have a Manitou. Your home laptop, your iPad, even your iPhone has a Manitou. I don't know how much longer I can keep this bit up with the keyboard. It just, I think I, after Cobra, I don't know what to do. It's my new shtick.
Yeah, it's pretty great, dude.
I'm going to go around the U.S. with this little...
I wish people could see how small this device is.
I have a Korg K oscillator right here, which is like a tiny little pad, and it really is. You can download the app. I mean, this sounds great.
It's amazing.
Again, it sounds like someone ate some bad seafood somewhere
like
along the way.
Yeah, it's like Manitou belch or something.
Yeah, yeah. Pardon me. I shouldn't have had that burrito. Thank you, Ron Lynch. That's a Ron Lynch quote.
But yeah, so...
So here we are. So we're in a world... So what I love about this movie, I like Native American stories. I mean, I like that we're being punished for being alive in this country where terrible, terrible atrocities took place. And that's never going to go away. I like when that happens. I like that that shows up in... or the assumed version of that in The Shining. But every story does start with the fact that we're on an ancient burial land of dead natives. I mean, it's just no matter what, Kramer versus Kramer, it takes place in a world where there are a bunch of murdered natives everywhere. Everything from that to 40-year-old virgin is in a world where Native Americans were killed. Is a man that can't seem to find the right girl. Yeah. So here we are. But I think that's fascinating. I like the idea of the Manitou. I think it's such a creative thing that a creature is growing on the back of the neck of this woman who kind of falls away in the story.
Sadly, yes. It's Susan Strasberg, by the way, who's a great
actor. That's right. And she is the daughter of...
Lee Strasberg.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she does employ a magical technique at the very end of the movie, which I won't get into. But let me say, there's something about this girl that's wonderful.
It surely is true. Yeah, no.
But yeah, so she is great. And yeah, she kind of falls away while we go on this second act journey to kind of uncover, to figure out, to kind of decipher what this is, how to combat it, and to build a team.
So, what you're dealing with is the Manitou, or spirit of a great medicine man, possibly in his fourth or fifth reincarnation.
Is that bad?
For you, yes. Each time a Manitou lives, he gains in strength. By the eighth reincarnation, he can join Gitche Manitou as a permanent spirit. Until then, the more lives lived, the more powerful. Five lives.
Well, how do you stop it?
You don't. You don't halt it. You don't slow it down. Each Manitou has its own momentum. All you can do is divert the spell and send it back from whence it came. But that would take lots of power to force a Manitou to make a 180-degree turn. And with so powerful a medicine man, you might have to wait until he leaves the woman's body.
That would kill her.
It would kill her body. But her spirit would live in the medicine man.
Her spirit would live. Great.
There's only one thing I know that might stop him.
What's that?
Evoke the powers of other spirits.
Now, how would I do that?
Well, mountain is good. Try wind. It's one of my favorites. Tell him John Singing Rock sent you.
Why won't you help me?
Mr. Erskine, You see this valley? From where we stand, there's over 500,000 acres of land. Some of the richest farmland in the world. 200 years ago, my ancestors owned all of this land. Now it's under title to the Missouri Holding Company. I don't want your pleas for help, Mr. White Man. I don't need your money.
And then the rest of it takes place. The third act is pretty much in this hospital. I don't want to talk about the hospital too much because I think it is a spoiler, right?
No, let's leave that. Yeah,
we'll leave it.
Let's just say shit gets crazy at the hospital.
Yeah, it does.
In a way that's really entertaining.
Yes.
But yeah, no, this is clearly William Girdler's shot at The Exorcist.
Yes. Know? Yes.
This is a guy who made Grizzly.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he's not above ripping off other movies, to say the least.
Well, yeah. So something comes up in this, in the commentary and in some of the interviews as I'm kind of exploring this whole Blu-ray. By the way, it's a transfer, and I think the movie looks really good and the sound's good. But one movie that I haven't seen that kept coming up was this movie that's, I guess, is out of print or there's some kind of legal complication, but a movie called Abby.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of a blaxploitation movie, and it's kind of... The Black Exorcist.
This was Abby. A woman loved and in love. Until that night. Then something evil came looking for a soul to possess.
I can't stop thinking about your husband.
That creep, forget him. Was this Abby? Now the fun starts.
Grab her, hold her. Hear me, demon. Leave this woman body.
Abby, rated R.
Which I'm like fascinated by, and have you seen it?
Now, I can't remember if I had seen it on a bootleg. I definitely I'm familiar with it, but I cannot remember if I've seen it on a bootleg or not.
I did a very limited search and found out that like you could probably buy a DVD of it on Amazon somewhere for like, you know, $50 or so.
Yeah.
But it looks like a movie that I'm totally interested in. And it kept coming up as being, you know, people spoke about it in a very kind way. And that it may have been an actually pretty great movie. So I'm pretty fascinated, and I'd love to track it down at some point. But that is Girdler.
Yeah.
That is Girdler. And this is a story that's based off of a novel. And in the novel, oh, by the way, I don't know when to get into all this stuff or not, but I did listen to the commentary. And it's one of those commentaries that I think we would like. You know, it's one of those commentaries where it's just packed full of information, and when there isn't information to give, we're getting some really great backstory on actors and
Absolutely.
All that stuff.
It goes through just about everyone in the cast.
Yes, indeed, because at some point, you know, you may not be able to talk about everything that's going on in the Manitou. Unfortunately, Mr. Girdler passed away in a helicopter crash,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
He's 30 years old, which is
really sad. Which is crazy because he made so many movies before he was 30. It's insane how many movies this guy made in his 20s, right?
I guess, yeah.
He must have started pretty young, but it's pretty impressive. I mean, he took the 70s and ran with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I still am a huge Day of the Animals fan.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. I think there's some stuff in there that you'd really like. I'm just like obsessed with Animals Attack movies, so that's like a big one.
What begins as a pleasant day of hiking in the woods becomes the Day of the Animals.
And then grizzlies. I think one of the great, not quite kinder trauma, but like it's got like this great moment where, I mean, it wasn't great when I was showing my son, who was like 7 or 8 at the time, but like these ladies get attacked by a grizzly and he takes a swipe at one of them and an arm just goes flying across the screen.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh yeah, this is PG. This is a PG rated. Oh, this is a 70s PG.
70s PG.
Okay.
They had a different MPAA, right?
Yeah. So
different
anyway.
People.
Different people.
There's like a post-Vietnam board of people who've seen it all.
Yeah.
This isn't, you want to see violence, go to Vietnam.
Arms flying?
Yeah.
Just one arm flying?
One arm? Yeah, he's still got an arm. He's fine. He'll make it home.
Yeah, so like that kind of stuff, I think I'm always amused by. Just the idea that this was a movie that the whole family went out to in 1976 or whenever.
Yeah,
it came
yeah.
You are being stalked by the most savage, carnivorous ground beast in the world. Anyone is fair game for grizzly. Over 2,000 pounds and 18 feet of gut-crunching, man-eating terror. The deadliest jaws on land belong to grizzly, rated PG, parental guidance suggested.
And what was the rating on this one?
This one was a PG.
This one's a PG as
and
well.
And there's a story that they told in the commentary about how they got an R and they went back and asked for a PG and didn't change anything.
Right, yeah.
And they got the PG. I mean, it's weird because, I mean, I guess there's not a lot of gore per se.
Not really. Not, no. I mean.
But it's a disturbing movie.
Yes, it is an odd, eerie, and interesting movie, any way you slice it. This is not a boring movie. This is, again, here we are in a metropolitan city, and a woman, just for no reason that we can find, begins inhabiting a spirit in her back. She has a Native American gentleman growing in the back of her neck that is going to reach fruition in some way. I mean, he's going to be birthed, and there's going to be like a sack of loose skin afterwards.
That's pretty gnarly.
That's pretty gnarly, yeah. And so another thing to notice is that this is, you know, 1 year after Star Wars, and Star Wars is, of course, Star Wars. So they do speculate in the commentaries that that there are laser beams and kind of outer spacey notions, because they're trying to, like,
well,
you know.
I think he even says that Girdler called it that at some point. It was The Exorcist meets Star Wars.
And
that's not, I've never seen that documented, but I thought he said that there was an interview or something.
There's something like that, yeah. Because I remember that too. I think that's in there. But
I just love that somebody was out there going, what's successful? What two things that really don't have anything to do with each other can I slap together?
Exactly.
The Exorcist
and
Star
and
Wars.
It's funny because Girdler is quoted several different times from, I think, a few different sources as being a guy who's like, look, I'm in this business to make money. What do the audiences want? I'll give it to them. I'll just give it to them. And then he makes this freak out lunatic movie called The Manitou that is like, this is what audiences want, because I think he really is like, he's a smart professional who's like scanning, you know, what they're looking at this, they're looking at that. Kids are, yeah, obviously, The Exorcist was the biggest horror movie of the 70s, and Star Wars, the biggest sci fi movie of the 70s. Put them together. What do you got? The Manitou. The Manitou.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, but I love these kind of crazy ass, like, you know, as we've been watching movies for years and years, certain ones will come up as like I said, The Visitor, or
right,
you know, just the ones that are the most nuts.
Yeah, that movie is. I watched that for the first time with mutual pal Pat Healy.
Oh, nice.
He brought over his Blu-ray, and we sat and went like. And our just brains went upside down in our head and switched around, and like, we're like, okay, I guess it's over. Well, there we are. There's a strange movie. There's a strange thing.
Yeah.
But going back to the movie, this is a big Tony Curtis movie. I mean, this is like Tony Curtis, and I think he hadn't been around that much, but he was still Tony Curtis, and I'm a Tony Curtis fan.
Me too.
But it was nice to see him in this movie, and he is an interesting. I'm just looking at his IMDb really quick, because
I just think he's really good at playing this sort of like con artist character.
Yeah, and he's light in this, and his role is not the hugest role. I mean, when you really think about what the story is, he's our everyman who's kind of a skeptic, even though he's making money off of faking that he's in it. And let's see. I mean, we know him from. I mean,
well, I was thinking Some Like It Hot feels like the character that he's most ripping off.
You promised me, Joe, that the minute we hit Florida, we were gonna beat it.
How can we? We're broke.
Well, we could find another band, a male band.
Look, stupid. Right now, Spats Colombo and his chums are looking for us and every male band in the country.
So humiliating.
So you got pinched in the elevator. So what? Would you rather be picking lead out of your navel?
All right. But how long do you think we can keep this up?
What's the beef? We're sitting pretty. Huh? Look, we get room and board. We're getting paid every week. Look,
What are you giving me with a flying fish? I know why you want to stay here. You're after sugar.
Me after sugar?
I saw you, the both of you, in that bus all lovey-dovey and whispering and giggling and borrowing each other's lipstick. I saw you.
What are you talking about? Me and
you
sugar?
You and sugar.
We're just like sisters.
Well, I'm your fairy godmother. And I'm going to keep an eye on you.
Yeah, it feels like that. Because he is playing kind of light comedy, and he does throw in jokes here and there that are, like, light and silly and fun. I'm trying to look at what else, like...
I mean, he'd done, like, the Boston Strangler. But
yeah,
that was,
okay.
So that was a ways before
that
this.
That was, like, a year... And by the way, this is the same year that Jamie Lee Curtis would show up in Halloween for
I
the
know,
first
isn't
time.
That
so
interesting?
They're both in these, I would say, both monumental horror films at the same time.
One seems a little more fondly remembered than the other.
Well, they're different movies.
A little bit.
Well, one of them's a Manitou.
That's right.
I mean, the other one's got... I mean, look, you're going to find that Halloween, as great as it is, very few Manitous happening throughout the whole thing.
I just don't like that at all, man. In retrospect.
Yeah. I mean, they may be there, but they're not acknowledged in the same way that the Manitou does acknowledge them. Yeah. I'm in a strange place where I don't know how much I can talk about this movie without revealing. The reason that we're having, a little bit of problem explaining the story is because the whole thing builds to a lunatic ending. And if we start describing it, and this is part of the reason that you show up to this movie, because the journey is fun. It is interesting. You will not see a movie like this anywhere else. But once you get to that last act, it just goes into the bonkers world of just lunacy. And it's functioning on its own steam. It really is working on its own logic. But there's a point where you're like, well, I wonder what this looks like on the page. Because what's happening here is out of its mind in a way. And if you haven't seen this movie, you're just like, you're listening to me right now going, I have no idea what this is that you're talking about. But it is, let's say it's a hospital drama happens at the end.
An intergalactic hospital drama?
Yeah, an intergalactic hospital drama. But I will say this, the Manitou does get born at some point and wreaks havoc in its own way that it can. And it is a very muscular dwarf for a very good period. I mean, the guy's in shape. I don't know what to say.
I was
very little body fat, just really, really muscular.
I did some push-ups after.
Yeah. It makes you want to get in shape. This is the movie that makes you want to get in shape.
The Manitou
makes me want to be a better man or two.
Oh, that's good.
You make me want to be a better man or two.
I like that.
Yeah, compliment me.
I think we can both agree that if you're into this kind of movie,
yes,
then you got to see it.
You must see it. So this is a Scream Factory release, right? Our pals at Scream Factory. I keep favoring these guys only because they put out such great movies, and there's so much care that's put into it. So what you're going to see in these special features is a 2K scan of the original film elements. So Troy, I want to talk about Troy Howarth a little bit. He's the commentary guy. So, you know, we talked about before, again, I remember from last time we were talking about 10 to Midnight and we were talking about Cobra, and one was a really dense, super like film historian take on the thing. That's what this is a little bit more too.
Yeah.
I feel like this is like, it just starts going and this guy is going and going. I don't know. And I'm imagining that he did so much work and cared about this so much. I don't know exactly how this information is. I'm trying to imagine how it's laid out in front of him.
Well, I heard you can hear him clicking on a mouse a little bit.
Oh, you can?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, you must listen in headphones.
I did. Okay. I did, yeah. And so, like, he's clearly got some windows open for different shit. Like, could just be him looking at IMDb. I mean, if it's a little bit, I mean, it's clearly planned out, but there's also a freewheeling element to it.
Yeah.
That I like, but I think I like the Paul Talbot commentary a little better.
Yes, it is Paul Talbot. You're not going to beat that guy. Is.
And the accent, I think, is another thing that helps him, really.
Well, Talbot's a character from Boston. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't beat that.
Yeah, so this guy ain't that. But yeah, like you said, it's very in-depth. He talks at great length about the differences between the book and the movie.
Yes.
He talks at great length about all the actors. I think the thing that I was maybe missing for me was I wanted a little bit more... I don't know what. I don't want the movie explained to me because it's not like you can explain it. But
yeah, I think I think we do get a lot, though, from a really interesting interview from a guy who's just got a crazy sordid career. And maybe that's on that over there, the actual Blu-ray. because there are a lot of pieces here, and you kind of have to watch everything to put all the pieces together. But
The Graham Masterson?
It's the Graham Masterson interview, because Graham Masterson is the author.
Yeah.
And Graham Masterson, I think in one take, manages to go through an entire, like, three lives worth of an interesting career where he was this, he would write sexual self-help books, basically, or... I guess that would be masturbation for self-help. But they were to, like, how to please your lover.
Yeah.
Yeah, how to self or other person help.
How to drive your man wild, your woman wild in bed, how to drive the sequel, how to drive your man wild in bed. One of those two goes together.
But I love these kind of just working class writer stories, too, of a guy who's like, I'm creative, I'm a writer, how do I get work? Whereas it's like Stephen King in the early days. Like, I got to submit a story here, I got to submit a story there. And it's like On Writing, if you listen to Stephen King in the early days, if you listen to that that book on tape or read the actual book on paper.
Paper,
yeah. They used to have paper. Nice. But you get this really cool story of this guy who would basically use, like, I need a job, I need to get paid for this, I have this talent, and I have to find a way to do it, and I'm not going to say no to anything. And he found that he made a lot of money and got on bestseller lists because of these sex books. And then at some point he saw that, you know, horror was working, that Stephen King was doing stuff, and maybe this was a little bit after Carrie and all that stuff happened, I think. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the book was published right after Carrie, but everyone's looking at Stephen King going, like, I'm going to do that. And this guy did it, and then immediately they packaged this thing without a script. I guess that was the part of the story, too, is that they didn't have a script. Everyone, the producers, directors, everyone was like, we got a script, let's sell the movie. Oh, we got to sell the movie. We sold the movie. Okay, we sold the movie. We got distribution. Okay, write the script. And so they wrote the script and they put it together.
The screenplay was extremely close to the novel. In fact, the film is almost an exact reproduction of the novel. I think it's because the dialogue that I've always written and worked very hard on writing was quite naturalistic and came over well in a film. Writing dialogue is extremely difficult. If you actually wrote down as dialogue in your book the way that people really speak, it'd be so boring that nobody would ever want to read the book. And yet some novelists exaggerate the dialogue so that it's not naturalistic at all. So it's quite an art, and it takes quite a lot of difficult work to make dialogue sound as though it's real, even though it isn't. But they took all of that, Bill Girdler took all of that dialogue that was in the book and put it straight into the screenplay. So the actual story is very, very close to the original book.
And of course, like, shot it for what, under $3 million or so?
Oh yeah, it was a lavish budget for Girdler. I think
right.
It's his highest budget.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell in some ways. But I love the idea of a guy like him getting the most money that he ever got and what we get from that. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And there are some fun effects in this too. I mean, there are some fun, like, you know, practical effects. We were talking about practical effects before we turn it on, but the Manitou creature is, like, got a really cool facial prosthetic. He's got a kind of menacing look about him, and I liked the look and the design of his character. There's a crazy lizard beast kind of thing that...
Now, I couldn't tell...
I couldn't tell if they dressed up a dog.
Yeah.
Or no, but it seemed like there was something interesting about the movement, but it's also like, I love the movies from this era. I love when people try hard. My heart goes out to the whole thing.
No,
I'm
I mean,
on
it
board.
Didn't bother me, but it gave me a moment of like, is that a guy in a lizard suit or is that a lizard
in
that's
a man
shot?
Suit.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Go on. Yeah.
Regardless, it was very entertaining to watch for a second while I was confused.
Yeah.
But I just love the other thing that Graham Masterson mentions is that he wrote, I think, 6 Manitou books.
Yes. So what we
this should have been a franchise.
What we never knew was that there's the story of the Manitou continues on from this, and that I think that's pretty fascinating to know that it worked for him and he kept on doing it.
Well, and the Tony Curtis character, the Harry Erskine character, I think runs through all those and continues
to go
on these little adventures.
That's pretty cool. I don't know. Look, say what you want about remakes. Because I know I've spoken disparagingly of them, but it's stupid for me to do that because some of the best movies are also remakes. Like The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing is a really great remake, and he totally made it his own movie. People have done that, but this is the kind of movie that I think would be an interesting movie to really explore. I think there is something there, and I think you could make it. This is one of the few movies that I would love to see somebody who had the guts to do it take it on, because this is... you do not see a movie with this subject matter. Really?
No.
I mean, again, I want more Native American, like, stories of comeuppance, you know, of white man comeuppance. I think that's interesting. I think that's part of this world that we live in, and I like it.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And it's just such an interesting sort of, in terms of the spiritual nature of some of the Native American beliefs and things, like, it goes so deep and so interesting. And I'm not saying this is in any way necessarily an accurate representation of any beliefs that are real. I don't know.
Right.
But I know that there are some really interesting ideas in there.
And the feeling, yeah, and the feeling I got from the author commentary was that he just loved writing, and he was just kind of like, I'm kind of doing it. I'm making it up as I go along. I had this idea. There was, oh no, in the actual, okay, so in the commentary and in, I think it was mostly in the commentary, the notion was that instead of hearing Native American voices emanate from different people, strange, evil Dutch people, you would hear different words from old Dutch. That was in the commentary.
I missed that part.
Yeah, so the interesting part was that, you know, the people that came to America first, who wiped out all the Native Americans first, for some reason, this guy was using their language. This spirit was using their language.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was an extra cool little tiny thing, because ultimately, this is like a ghost story where the ghost is slowly manifesting itself in this very slow gestation period.
Well, and they say something at some point about he's on his 10th lifetime or something.
Yeah. So he pops up here and there. He can't really die. He can only just be cast away for a little while he goes back and gathers strength to come back again.
Yeah.
No, but so I mean, far, he's not gotten it right to take over the world or whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, see, that's why we need this 5 sequels.
But for all the information that we do have, I am still curious to know more and more and more, and I don't know that I'll ever get that until maybe I read the book.
I was going to say, now I need to read 5 Manitou books.
I know. Yeah, it's funny. My brother has the paperback.
Oh,
and I was like, did you read it? And he, like, sent a picture of it because I told him about this. And he's like, no, I haven't read it yet, but I'm very interested because I feel like it's like the tip of the iceberg of a whole world that I'm very curious about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this is a nutso bazonkoids movie that either adds up or doesn't, depending on how you see it.
I don't know. There's just certain movies that I feel like, I mean, we say this kind of thing a lot, but could only be made in the 70s.
Right.
And are one of the things I love about the 70s.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
This, that, you know, The Exorcist gets popular, then this movie comes out.
It begets everyone's, like, you know, it's just everyone's warped take on what this masterpiece is. Everyone's like, I think I can do that for you know, $150,000. I'm pretty sure I can.
It's just dudes in a room with somebody.
I know, yeah.
Holy water, right?
Someone's talking, you know, you pitch their voice down later on. Yep. It sounds like an exorcism's happening.
Mercedes McCambridge to, you know, do crazy voices.
But back to Burgess Meredith.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about him because he's a part of, he's a part of my movie life, I guess, very much so. I think the first time I really became aware of him was seeing Clash of the Titans in the theater.
Can you see me?
Nothing. Nothing of you at all. Where are you?
I'm invisible. Can't you see that?
All I can see are your footsteps. The gods are truly remarkable. Perseus, where are you going?
To Joppa!
Your sword! Oh, impetuous. Foolish. Oh, dear. The young. Why do they never listen? When will they ever learn?
Nice.
Yeah, because that was a big movie. These fantasy movies, yeah, Clash of the Titans is a big one for me. Because that's a Harryhausen movie, and I remember being a kid in the 80s in the theater with my mom watching that movie, and my mom was kind of telling me about Greek mythology, like, in between as I was getting bored before another, like, sword fight would happen or something. And I remember seeing him there, right? And then later on, and then, of course, I would watch The Twilight Zone, and I would know about his really important thing there, and he'd sit on his glasses at some point. But that was an important, exciting movie for me, too, because I liked all those fantasy movies from the early 80s. Spoiler alert. And Yeah, but he kind of glides, and then Rocky, of course.
Oh, yeah, that was my first introduction.
Yeah, yeah, and I would kind of learn that in the 80s, too, but I think Clash of the Titans was my first one, and then...
That's a much cooler entry point, by the way.
Yeah, it's very different. It's less grounded than Rocky. And then him being incredibly hilarious in his 80s when he would do these, the Grumpy Old Men movies.
Yeah.
Which is Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, still insanely funny. And I went through those movies recently and they still work.
Nice.
They're
I gotta come back to
those. Yeah, to me they're fantastic.
Nice. Yeah, I love Burgess Meredith so much. I mean, it started with Rocky,
mm-hmm.
and then The Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. and then Batman.
Yes, you know? Oh, right, the old Batman, yeah.
Just the Penguin is like, my wife and I still, it's just like that noise that
whack,
he
makes.
It's
whack,
just so
yeah.
ingrained in us that you can just throw it out sometimes.
He's just always clenching on that cigarette holder thing and his monocle and everything. I remember that. And then they said in the commentary, they said something I didn't know, that a lot of his dialogue in Batman, he was having a ball because he was improvising a lot.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, he's incredible. And he takes, and they say this in the commentary, but he takes what could be like an incredibly boring scene.
Yes.
And just because of himself and what he is, makes it interesting. Like the whole group that develops Tony Curtis and some mystical stragglers, some people that are curious about.
It's like some actual, so Tony Curtis, who is a skeptic, is actually coincidentally friends with major like spiritual people who, occultish people that have some connection to the other side. And they go to a place and they do have a seance, right? And this may be before, I think
this is before they go see Burgess. Yes.
Right. So they go and there's a really cool effect that happens there too. They do kind of get a glimpse at what this Manitou is.
Oh,
and it's this really cool moment with this, almost looks like it's black sludge that it's rising out of from this table. And I just really love this effect because it's what I love about effects where it's not perfectly, it's deliberately underlit. It makes me want to lean in and look and figure out the shape and size and understand and all that stuff. But it's giving me just a little less than that, so I'm curious and curious and curious. And that's what I think great effects really do, unless you, like, you know, put China ball lights on everything and show everything constantly. I love that kind of practical effect stuff.
Well, on top of that, then they have all this crazy colored Suspiria lighting going on.
Yes, yes, yes. So it does look like Fulci movies. It looks like Black Sabbath, you know, the original.
Yeah, the commentator guy was speculating that, you know, Suspiria had come out the year before. Maybe he had seen it, but more likely maybe Mario Bava or something.
Mario Bava, Mario Bava, of course, yeah. So that's what it does. It does feel like that because it's also these old lenses that are, like, kind of imperfect, too, because you're, like, 2.35:1 aspect ratio this whole
nice
movie.
Wide.
Yeah, it's nice and wide, which is, that's how I like it. I don't want anything else. I want nice and wide. I want 2.35:1 or I want nothing. But these are also these imperfect old lenses where it's somewhere it's focused, some places it's not so focused, you know? And that's just the nature of the lens. Plus, in this Blu-ray, they talk about how they're like, this is the best. The original print is long gone.
Yeah.
And so it's probably a copy of a copy. But you wouldn't really know. I think it's probably pretty accurate to what it must have looked like.
Yeah, I can't imagine it looking much better in the theater.
Yeah,
it looks
exactly.
Really nice.
It does. And then, so at some point they're trying to find some more information about Native Americans and they flip the book over and they go, well, what if we contact the author? And then they go to the author's house and lo and behold, it is Burgess Meredith.
And he is styling with this goatee that is like something else.
It's like a Freud-esque kind of
Very Freud.
Vibe.
He's got a very Freudy thing going. It seems like that was probably his thing. He's like, I'm going to go Freud on this.
Yeah,
cool?
I think so. Like tweed thing and the goatee looking cool.
Dr. Snow. Is there any way to stop this medicine man or whatever it is before it kills her?
Well, you know what you have to understand is that the magic of ancient Indian tribes was very, very powerful. They were, in fact, one of the great magical societies of modern times, of pure ethnic occult art. And they were, this is a mess, they were, undiluted with European conceptions and preconceptions. The whole concept with the Indians, the whole concept of life and death and inner space was rolled up in the Indian's demon, the equivalent demon. Their demon would be possessed of monstrous, monstrous power.
Then what you're saying, Doc, is we're out of luck?
Ah, you've got it. Yes, yes, you're right. Here it is. You're right, sir. You're right. And if this medicine man of yours is really 400 years old. He comes from a time when the magic of the Indians was amazingly strong.
Well, what the hell does he want? I mean, why would he want to be reborn in Karen?
I assume he didn't choose her deliberately. I think she just probably happened to be at the right place at the wrong time.
And then being silly and like walking into spider webs and stuff like that. And yeah, this movie was unafraid to be plucky when it wanted to, you know?
Yeah, it is bizarre, man. I just love...
And that's nothing to where... I mean, again, we keep holding off on what we want to talk about, which is the lunacy of the last act.
Yeah, but I think it all...
We can't, though.
No, we can't talk about that. But I think it all sort of helps this movie be so interesting because... I don't want to say Girdler's a guy who doesn't know how to make a movie, because he clearly does.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I find that people that worked outside the studio system a little bit have less of a belief in structure.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. It is weird, though, sometimes you're like, this happens and this happens and this happens, and it's not... It's
not all streamlined all the time.
No. And I don't mind that, but...
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to give any... leeway to a movie, it's going to be a movie that's like Manitou.
Yes.
Like, listen, you guys obviously have decided to do something incredibly strange. Please just do it your own way. Take your time. Do whatever you need to do. We may sit around, walk into a cobweb for a while, make some business with a crazy wig that you find and shrug. I don't know. But it's all fun. It's all really fun, and it's also out of its mind. But it's also, there are moments, too, where one of my favorite sequences of this that I think we've already talked about, which is the woman floating down the hallway sequence.
Yes.
And I really do like that because the commentator guy said, oh, it's a little Sam Peckinpah because he's like zooming in and zooming out. But they're really, to me, highly stylized moments. And those are the kind of moments I really like when you put your foot on the gas pedal and go, I'm going style. And in that moment, that's one of my favorite moments of this whole thing. Plus, you're like cutting back and forth with Tony Curtis. This woman ends up, being inhabited by this Native American for a moment and crashing down these stairs. It's fun to watch anybody fall down the stairs. I don't care what age they are. It's entertainment.
I agree.
But again, if I saw an old lady floating around me, I would probably call everyone I know. And go, hey, there's supposed to be there's a Native American spirit floating, being born on my ex girlfriend's neck. But today I saw a woman float. That's what I saw. And it was really
strange. My name's Tony Curtis. Do you have a moment to talk? An old lady was floating around me. She was floating. She spoke some strange language. And then she kept on floating and floating. And eventually she fell down the stairs. This is Tony Curtis. Please watch The Manitou.
Wow, we got an actual radio spot.
Yeah, there you go.
Cut in there for a second. That's great.
That's good, yeah.
It's so neat how they used to record those.
Yeah, it is. They used to do them live. Live. that's a good spot, though.
Yeah, I like how he introduces himself at the beginning and the end of the spot.
Yeah, that's the way you do it.
You're listening to Tony Curtis. You've seen me in Babes in Toyland. Wait, was that me or was that Frankie Avalon? You did see me in Bleach play Kid Bingo. That's for sure. Wait a minute. That was Frankie Avalon. Well, you did see me in Gentlemen Prefer Blood. Nope, that was Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, jeez. He blew it, man. He can't get it together. Well, he's old now.
Oh, dude.
He's a lot older than he's been.
Where did we get those Tony Curtis outtakes?
It's so amazing. You really are. You got a lot of good Tony Curtis clips. It's great.
Yeah.
I was in Spartacus. Now I'm in The Manitou. I'm Tony Curtis. Thanks for listening. It makes me feel good.
I don't know where to go from there. But,
yeah, he is great. He is great in the movie. There's just a lot of good stuff.
I like Tony. I've always, every time I see Tony Curtis, I'm excited to see him.
Me too.
So, I mean, he's a movie star from Hollywood. What am I going to do? Not like to see him? But he is a surprise to see in a movie that's technically a horror movie that is a horror movie about a spirit that grows on the back of the neck of a lady.
Yeah.
So everything's odd. Everything's weird about this movie, and that's why anytime you can serve up a movie like this, I'm going to be front and center, and I'm going to watch it like I did like 2-3 times for this thing, you know, and still be perplexed. And like, hopefully, if I watch it that many times, and I have a commentary, and I have producers, and I have authors explaining me through it, and I'm still scratching my head at the end, then to me, that is a Brendan Small thumbs up.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, we can start wrapping this up, but I think it's just one of those movies that you just, we're kind of looking for this stuff. You know what
yeah.
I mean? If you're into this kind of craziness, it's the kind of movie that you've been looking for.
I have to say this, and maybe I've said this before to you, but I love this era right now where these things that we probably wouldn't have seen that are archived and forgotten and maybe only spoken about are all slowly coming out. You know, someone found somebody found a print of it somewhere. They had to make it and color correct it and clean it up and all that stuff. And I'm so happy that it keeps on happening. And I'm so happy that guys like Shout Factory and Scream Factory are putting the work in to let, because this is seriously, I am the audience for all of this shit. I'm so excited to see. I know that like every time, like that's what I do because I have shit I'm doing and I shouldn't be doing this other stuff, but I'm doing this other stuff because I'm fascinated. It's inspiring. It's exciting. And plus, it's just for me, this is how I like to be entertained. And I think I was saying this to you earlier. I like really good movies.
Me too.
I like really good movies. And I also like really bad movies. None of this in-between bullshit. That's nope. That's my whole feeling. It's got to be really good or really bad. I have to be fast. And like, it's got to be, because a great bad movie is just totally interesting, right? I think we watched it. We had a movie night recently.
We had a movie night
that was really fun because I hadn't seen the movie. You hadn't seen the movie.
Nope.
And that's not the movie we're reviewing, but we could talk about this movie if we want to.
Briefly, I think it would be fun because I recorded an episode with Rob the other night that's going to go up, I think, after this one.
Okay.
And we touched on it.
So we'll touch on it. But
so this is like a little bonus review at the end of this series.
Mm-hmm.
This is the movie night we had the other night. We watched Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Yeah, so Brian, myself, and Rob G. all sat down, and Andy Sedaris, not Amy Sedaris, watched this movie that was, oh boy, I don't think there's a dull moment going on, and that to me is, that's a thumbs up movie.
Crazy snake puppets, I talked about that briefly.
Oh yeah, there's some really great snake puppets, but the great thing about Andy Sedaris is that he understands, you know, this is part of storytelling, is that you've got your big story, but you've got all these little tiny stories inside, and they're like little act breaks, however you want to divide them up or call them. I see them as set pieces, especially in this thing, and I think he has created a world where no matter what he introduces, it's going to pay off in one way or another, and to me, that is, it's craftsmanship, it really is, because you've seen movies where, you know, things go nowhere and they're unresolved and it's just lunacy, but for some reason, he pays off everything, whether or not it's totally the most satisfying payoff. Well, it is in this case. So Hard Ticket to Hawaii is just a little bonus review. Do check it out if you haven't. And the people that have seen it, I know you're furiously nodding in your cars or whatever, going, yes, I have seen this movie, and it's about time to rewatch it.
What are you two doing here?
Now calm down, Mr. Romero. We got some bad news.
Yeah, boss. Somebody beat us to the stuff. They got away.
Looks like they almost killed you. Who were they?
It was a couple of broads.
Broads? You dummies.
They got away on that cargo plane.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Molokai cargo.
Yeah.
If brains were birches, you'd have a clean cage.
So I have Miami Connection coming.
Nice.
So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Hard Ticket isn't quite Miami Connection. It's a little less, like that movie is so, have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
So,
great.
So I mean, obviously I was inspired to go track down stuff like this.
It's great. It's a little more earnest than
the
Sedaris movie. And that's part of what's really entertaining about it. I do
love
it. But these are all batshit movies. Like, it's not like we're totally off topic because
no.
I think The Manitou, Hard Ticket to Hawaii, Miami Connection, these are all like really out there entertaining.
And by the way, the other movie, if I were to connect this to another movie, finally, The Dark Backward is on Amazon Prime right now. And I hadn't seen that since like the 90s, like since like the mid 90s. I rented a store and I was like,
well, you can, totally tie this in.
Yeah, because this is very much. These are movies where things are growing out of the people's backs.
It's a very specific subject.
Yeah, there are not a lot of movies where things are constantly growing out of people's backs. Maybe, what was it? James L. Brooks. I'm just thinking about like the cancer story and what do you call it? But that's not this. These are hands or Native Americans growing out of people's backs.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, I can see you're searching. I don't think there's anything else.
Altered States, but not really.
Yeah,
exactly.
Altered States.
Not quite.
He is transformed, but there is.
But in terms of like actual things growing out of people's backs,
appendages or additional dependents.
Oh, man, tax season. Can you imagine?
I know. How do you claim your Manitou?
You got it.
That's a good question, yeah.
You don't want to fuck around with
Yeah, you have to, like, you know you will be cursed, a Native American curse, if you do not claim your Manitou as a dependent.
You need to.
Oh, man.
But so people that don't know The Dark Backward is about Judd Nelson.
Yeah.
I said Hirsch, which is a totally different movie.
It would probably have the same effect ultimately, though. But skinny young Judd Nelson and
Bill Paxton.
Bill Paxton, that's right. And Wayne Newton.
Oh, God, yeah.
We're going to Hollywood!
Starring Judd Nelson.
My name is Marty Mull.
Bill Paxton.
It's Gussie Pussy.
Wayne Newton.
Yes, Jackie Chrome.
Lara Flynn Boyle.
I love you, Marty Mull.
James Caan.
I'm a doctor.
Rob Lowe.
Dirk Delta.
The Dark Backward.
We're going to Hollywood, and we're going to be big stars.
That's my boy! That's my boy!
Hollywood.
Yeah, you forget all these people are in there. That is a movie I was watching it with a friend of mine, and it's just a movie that takes place in the garbage can world, like the world of trash. Everything's trash and filth and repugnance. Over repugnance and of course an up and coming stand up comedian who is not necessarily finding his way on stage notices a growth on his back that eventually continues growing into an entire arm of a third arm out of his back, and he becomes kind of a sensation because of it.
Yep.
Anyway, so that's a good double feature.
Yeah,
with
I was
going to
say Manitou, Dark Backward double.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I would actually watch that double, and I think it would be a blast.
Yeah,
not joking at all.
Yeah, yeah,
totally
no,
watch that.
I completely agree because The Dark Backward is a fascinating movie. It's a really interesting. There's no movie like it. So I've been a fan for a long time. So yeah, so like I said, the fact that these movies are coming out and they're getting really great transfers, to me, it's so exciting. I just want to. And it's also nostalgic, too, because I caught bits and pieces of these movies as a kid. Not Manitou, because I had to wait until I was a very grown-up man to be able to see that. But
definitely show your kids the Manitou.
Yeah.
It is PG, after all.
It is PG. You will
don't show your
frighten.
Kids.
Don't show anybody. Yeah.
Don't show anybody.
The movies we're talking about, get really drunk or high and watch these movies. Otherwise...
That's probably a good recommendation.
It probably is, because actually, you wouldn't be able to follow these movies if you were in the bag or totally stoned.
Especially because you'd be really messed up by the end, which is the most bonkers part.
Exactly. Some of these movies give the effect of drugs and alcohol without having done any of them.
Yeah. I was going to say, falling asleep and waking up in the midst of that last sequence would be pretty amazing.
That would be pretty crazy. You would really have to backtrack and try to figure out how we got here. And still.
No.
And even still, with all the information, with three commentary tracks and whatever else, you're not going to figure out exactly how we got here.
Yeah, but like you say, we've said it before, the Scream Factories have been around for a while, we're still getting gems like this, and I love that, and I don't want to say that it's because of social media, but I do know that like the way things are shared now, and the way you can reduce something batshit crazy to like a fucking GIF,
yes,
and you can sell somebody on a movie with a GIF, and if you look up... I mean, if you don't want to get spoiled, don't look it up. But if you look up Manitou GIFs, you will see some GIFs of the ending.
Yeah.
And they're fucking amazing. And that may be enough to sell you. And what I like about that is that being more shareable and being able to catch people's attention in that way makes it easier, I think. I mean, I'm not saying Scream Factory is going to make a ton of money on the Manitou, but I think it makes it easier for them to sell a movie like this or to justify, we're going to put out the Manitou because people like crazy fucking movies.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know, I think we're similar in this way that it's so great to see a deep cut like this out in the open. And if you don't know about this, I'm not the guy that will ever shame a person for not having seen a movie. I'm always like, you're just in for a treat. You know? That, and that's how I feel, too. If someone's like, have you not seen this? Oh, you're going to... When you do, you will call me and you will thank me for introducing you to this movie. And that's how I feel about all this kind of between great Blu-rays and these great streaming platforms that are showcasing and curating cool stuff. So, and that's why I like your show. That's why I like this show, too, between this and Pure Cinema and even from Rob, from the Shockwaves, is that there's a lot of curation going on. And that, I think, right now is a crucial thing because here we are, sifting through Netflix, Amazon Prime, Shudder, now Criterion.
Yes.
All these really cool things, and we lose our minds, our heads explode trying to make a decision of what to watch. So we need voices like yours to continually tell us, hey, take a look over here.
Well, that's nice. You know?
It is nice. Well, and it's a needed thing right now.
Well, I like to think that if I'm doing that for people, great, but I'm also getting that from, you know, the film community,
mm-hmm.
from you, from all these people around that are watching things, reminding me, you know, I just love that. That's one of the things that, my wife isn't into social media at all. It's not her thing. She's very anti.
That's good.
It is good.
It's good for her mental health.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. But I think the one thing she misses out on is that sort of larger conversation you can feel a part of.
Yeah.
And that film conversation can go so many different places. You can be talking on Twitter about Hitchcock and in the same moment be talking about batshit crazy movies.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
I just love that. I love the idea of people sharing what they're watching, and we're building sort of a communal experience.
Without a doubt.
In a different way.
Yeah. You know?
It's not like when there's only three TV channels. It's different now. But
it is so different. But yeah, but there are these pockets of people like us who love these oddities, and they want, like me, I love physical media. I always have. But the fact is that I also need to, like The Manatee, I was so excited to see the Blu-ray coming out because I'm like, this is a movie I need to do a deep dive in and try to figure out as much as I can. And still, with the amount of stuff they packed on this, and I think they really did as much as they could pretend. I don't know what else you could put on this thing. I still need to know more about this batshit fucking,
like, really,
super nuts movie.
I'm really serious about maybe looking into a Manitou book buying spree, because I want to get some background on this world, you know.
Oh man, I hope it gets back on the bestseller list because of this podcast.
This
Amblin Entertainment options the Manitou series.
The Manitou series.
Yeah.
Seriously, Netflix, if you're listening.
Yeah, Netflix.
Manitou series.
Yeah, I'm Russia. Yeah. Sorry, I never need to do that again. But but yeah, so we've gone through everything. The only thing I think we didn't talk about was the co-producer or producer of this thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, his interview I liked.
Yeah, but he's on there too. Yeah, it's about kind of more about the process and a relationship, and again, he goes back into Abby too, which makes me want to track down Abby, and again, that seems like it's a rights issue. So, but that's pretty much, I think we covered everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to look at my notes for the producer interview. It's producer David Sheldon. It's an 11-minute interview.
Yeah.
He goes through his history and then working with Girdler and, Abby and Sheba Baby and stuff.
Yeah, they were in a production company together. They split away. They came back together.
Yeah.
Manitou happened. And
I wanted more than 11 minutes on working with Girdler. Just because the guy is gone, I wanted to just know a little bit.
I agree. Yeah. Look, if I'm tasked to make the Manitou Blu-ray, I don't know where I would begin. This is like, you know, this is like a crazy, just, you're like a forensics, you know, scientist just trying to like get any kind of clue, like some archaeological expedition. How do I find out more about this Manitou? And I still want to know more.
Yeah.
I still need to know more. I guess the only way is to talk to Mr.
Tony Curtis. Hey, it's me, Tony Curtis from The Manitou. You know, you saw me in all those other movies, but the only movie I can really get behind is The Manitou. Manitou, like I said earlier, Manitou's everywhere. Manitou's, you got Manitou, you drive around in your car right now, that's a Manitou, pretty much. You drive your steering wheel, it's its own Manitou. You know, you have a CD player, it's got a Manitou also. The knob, that's got a Manitou too. Every your gear shift, Manitou. If you lift the driver, you're a Manitou. Picking up somebody, and they're a Manitou too. Everyone's a Manitou. Man of three, man of four, man of five. Everybody got Manitou. My name's Tony Curtis. Thanks for listening to me. Please check out Manitou Blu-ray with all the special features, commentary tracks, and everything else coming down to you. Check it out. Get Manitou, Tony Curtis.
Oh man, I don't know, man. I think that should be the close.
You think they'll satisfy people?
I think that's it. I think that's all we can do.
I'm satisfied by that. I don't know. I was the audience at some point. I shut off and Tony took over.
Yeah, no, it was great.
All right, perfect.
Anyway,
let's turn the fan on. Yeah. Yeah. Oh shit.
Oh, I'll say thank you, Brendan, for coming on again.
Absolutely. Look, this is all I want to do is talk about crazy movies. That's, I want to talk
We've
about.
We've got another
good
one
movies.
Lined up.
Good. That's right. That's right. And that one I think is.
Please keep doing that. Keep an eye out and tag me when you see
I
something.
I will,
because
absolutely.
We got to keep doing it. Until you get sick of doing this,
I am,
I'm going to keep hitting you up to do this.
Then consider me here, because
right.
I'm on board. All right, great.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you, and everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray-filled week, and watch The Manitou. This is not Tony Curtis. Okay, bye.
Excuse me. Oh, we did it.